It's 8:18. Joining me now on the phone, Summit County Council Member Doug Clyde. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start first with your reaction to the problem of paying for this assessment district for the Silver Creek sewer. I mean, what option are you favoring or leaning toward?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think there was some unanimity in the council in looking for the option. This was a complicated matrix, as you may know, but looking for an option with either a balloon or a monthly payment, that's what we instructed the county attorney to draft up. Again, this was an information item only, so no decision was made. You know, our hope, of course, is that other people will join into the district, that the costs will eventually be covered. But as you aptly noted, we don't know the full cost at this point. We're going out to bid again. The costs are the overall costs are very expensive. We're reaching the point of resistance with the homeowners. But at the same time, we have a very serious problem in terms of pending or existing water quality issues from failing septic systems in that area. And so it all points to the problems of land planning with without evaluating the impacts on natural resources.
Exactly. I mean, this the water quality problems that we face, this is everybody's problem. So can't we just require them to put in sewer?
This is a complicated issue. We have an option of simply of putting in a moratorium and saying that no more lots can be developed until sewer hookup is done. But that is, of course, extremely heavy-handed on the part of the government. These lots were platted some time ago. I don't know when. They were sold as developable lots based on the assumption that septic could be utilized at the time. We now have better data, which tells us that septic systems in that area are failing, that our water quality is suffering. So, we would like this to be solved in such a way that the development rights of those properties are not impaired. But these people are going to have to pay some money, and because of the increasing costs, in order to make the deal as originally conceived go forward, there may be a residual that the county might have to pick up. So
yeah.
It's a brutal decision. Again, trying to protect property rights, but also trying to limit the cost of additional cost to the county.
Yeah, how long could a moratorium be implemented for? Indefinitely?
Well, again, those are really complicated legal questions. I have seen moratoriums in other areas in work that I've done in other states that have gone on for perhaps as long as a decade. I don't know what the limits are in Utah, but moratorium is by far our least desirable alternative.
All right. But at the same time, I mean, all of us county taxpayers could be on the line for this financially.
Yes. And, and again, this is a problem that, it's one of the issues that I ran on, frankly, is that we have done an awful lot of land planning in the past that have significantly degraded our water quality. We are on the verge of doing a lot of land planning in the future that will have the same results, and this is just a shining example of why you don't do that sort of stuff. So we're cleaning up old problems and trying to prevent new ones. That's where we're at.
The council did put off action on an ordinance that would allow building on hillsides, ridgelines, and geologically hazardous soil, wanting to get more analysis. What's your position when this came through the East Side Planning Commission?
Yeah, this is an ordinance that has been poorly understood by some members of the county. The existing Eastside County Code says that building on ridgelines is prohibited. Period. Right. So when a person comes in with an existing lot and they go to get a permit, they can't get one because there is a direct absolute prohibition on the East Side Code. We're attempting to modify the code to allow the planning department, the community development director, to mitigate the impacts on existing lots by where they locate the building, how tall the building is, the architecture of the building, et cetera. So we're attempting to clean up the code in order to provide some hardship relief for existing lot owners. Then there is also the other part of going forward, should we be building on ridgelines, should we be building on steep slopes? My background, which is pretty broad through a number of different jurisdictions in a few different states, says that, you know, even in mountainous terrain, generally, universally, we cut off development at about 30% slope. Doesn't mean that roads and other structures won't go across slopes that are steeper than that. That's part of being in the mountains. But when you start developing on slopes that are over 30%, the impacts of infrastructure, roadways, driveways, all the rest of those things become huge. So my personal opinion and I think general practices in mountainous environments is that 30% is somewhere near the practical limit.
All right. Representative Promontory, though, asked for an alternative restricting on slopes over 33%. Otherwise, she said many other lots will have some problems. You had a response to this. What was that?
Well, my response was Promontory, as you know, is an already entitled project with a spa. And so if in that entitlement, in fact, they were granted the ability to develop on slopes steeper than that, but somehow or another they're running into a conflict with the code, then what I suggest is that we go back and modify their spa, but not change the overall development plan parameters throughout the county in order to accommodate what essentially was a land plan that's probably 20 years old.
So even though the current code says you don't allow building on hillsides and ridges, a couple of people say, what do you mean? We've had lots of houses built on hills.
Yes, and, again, past practices can predate the existing language on the code. So without a specific example, I can't give you a specific answer, but they can either predate those things. They can be lots of record that had an entitlement to be built there, and they were perhaps granted a special exception permit, or it simply could have been an error made at the part of by the part of building at the time that the permit was granted. That doesn't change what the existing law is.
Yeah, and then you had from other people during public comment bringing up property rights. So I guess the question was, can you limit people's land use based on somebody else's visual impact?
Yeah, Roger answered that question rather directly. The comment that was made was that you can't tell me what I can do on my property. First of all, just my own response to that, settled law on that matter is that telling people what they can do on their property as a matter of protecting the overall general public's health, safety, and welfare, again, that's been settled law for the neighborhood of 80 years. So absolutely we have the right to do that. And the state ordinances that Roger quoted are very clear that we have the right to do that. That's the responsibility of government, is to control land use so that they do not adversely affect the general health, safety, and welfare of the public.
Well, then let's just take that back to the whole sewer discussion. I mean, we can do it with building on ridge lines, but we can't do it without requiring people to put sewer in?
Well, we can require people to put in sewer. We can require moratoriums. We can do moratoriums. But we're dealing two separate issues here. One is past mistakes, right, which is what Silver Creek is. Silver Creek is a past mistake in which we granted entitlements to people. A lot of people have relied on those entitlements. I feel that we have some responsibility to allow people to go ahead and get beneficial use out of that property. Doesn't mean we won't require them to pay. The fees that they are being required to pay under the current deal are pretty darn extreme. They're not only all the fees that you pay to Snyderville normally, but up to, I believe it's $1,700 per unit per year for 20 years. So a big chunk of change. Those are past practices. Future practices are, let's not make those mistakes again.
All right. On another topic during council comments, Doug, you had an anecdote that showed that the county needs to communicate better about the $36 a year fee. Can you quickly tell us that story?
Well, that it's simple enough. It's part of the ongoing issue that we've been grappling with for some time, and it simply is that I had a report from a constituent that said that they had called Republic Services, and Republic Services had said the $36 fee was for building the new cell in the land site in the landfill. That's not the case. The $36 fee was the direct result of increase in the cost of collection of both curbside recycling bins and the dumpsters that we have out in the county. The cell itself is handled out of the general fund and is a separate matter. So it's just that there's bad information out there. Republic had no basis in fact for making that comment. I'm not quite sure why they did.
Council also appointed two new Snyderville Planning Commissioners, Thomas Cook and Melina Stevens. Can you tell us anything about those two?
We interviewed them in the previous meeting, and choices made. I don't have their background information in front of me. That stuff is on the website if anybody wants it.
Okay. Anything else, Doug, you wanted to mention?
I think that's it, Leslie. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. That's Summit County Council Member Doug Clyde. KPCW News Time. The Park City Planning Commission met last night, and although Treasure Hill was continued, Commissioner still did hear some public comment in the studio to give us some details about that and other agenda items. I have Park City Planning Commissioner Preston Campbell in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So while Treasure didn't give a presentation, you did have a couple of citizens speak during public comment, one of whom was Nathan Holt. He lives at the top of Lowell. He said in January several times that their trash hauler made several attempts to get their bins for pickup but couldn't safely make it up the hill. And he also talked about how narrow the road is with all of the snow and that cars had to stop for pedestrians who were going up and down to ski. So as we think about putting even more development up, that does that give you pause?
I think the transportation in and out of that site has always been the biggest sticking point for us of how that's going to work, how many cars are going to come up there, and how they're going to make it safe.
Yeah. And so you'll hear this come March then, more of the traffic study?
We will, and I think that was one of the concerns of some of the people that talked last night, was that they only had this month. There was some misinformation out there that if we don't talk about transportation and traffic this month, we won't get a chance to get onto that topic, and that's not the case. We're going to hear as much of that as we need to.
All right. And my understanding is that they're actually going to be doing some more studies, especially over the President's Day holiday, which actually should give you some good information.
I hope so. The traffic study they've given us recently, is way outdated. And as unfortunately we all know, the traffic's a lot different now than it was even a year ago.
Well, and even last night, I'm not quite sure what was going on, but I had a number of phone calls, people calling to say, they're not going to make it on time to a restaurant because of all of the traffic. I don't know if you were out in it.
I was, and I mean, to me personally, I can't speak for the city council. They're the ones that are the real policymaking board. We're just an advisory board in that role, as you know. But, to me, it's the number one issue in the city right now.
Yeah. Still, we can't hold Treasure accountable for our existing traffic problems.
No question, that's true.
So how do we separate it?
I think sitting at a big table and talking about it and looking for alternatives. At the last Planning Commission meeting, at first glance, I think a lot of these ideas seem crazy, but one guy said, why don't you build a tunnel? Bring them in from the lower end of Lowell and dig a tunnel. It would be expensive, but what they're, you know, that's a big expensive project. I'm not advocating for any of those ideas. I'm just saying that everything should be on the table.
All right. So this will come back in March, and correct, we'll also discuss traffic in April as well.
As long as we need to. That is one of the main issues.
All right. You had a conditional use permit request for the historic home at 422 on Ontario Avenue, approved rather easily just because it met all the criteria?
You know, most places, a CUP is done administratively. We're one of the few bodies that actually sees those, and we've specifically asked the staff to not bring those to us or to bring them on a consent agenda, which is what happened last night. We didn't even open that or discuss it. It was because it was on the consent agenda, and it already did meet all the rules. That does give a lot of power to staff because they, you know, they get to decide what goes on that consent agenda. We don't even see those items until the packet comes out.
Yeah. So any concern? I mean, what used to be a hillside of miners' shacks is really now a hillside of starter castles?
They're still going to be pretty small. I mean, if you look at the packet, that house is small. That one was a little unusual. The Board of Adjustment had granted them some variances. They got some waivers on side and rear yard setbacks and also on height restrictions. I'm not sure that the Planning Commission would have given all of those, but that wasn't in our purview last night to be able to do that. It was either an up or down vote.
The big topic of the night, the amendment for the Deercrest Associates. The attorney said that they've all agreed to eliminate the requirement to disconnect the road. Even so, it seemed like it was an issue for you and especially Commissioner Steve Joyce. What are your concerns with that?
My concern is we have a lot of applicants these days that are coming in and trying to reopen old deals that were made before we got there. And just speaking personally, that makes me very uncomfortable. I don't have access to all of the data that was in front of the commission 10 or 20 or some cases 30 years ago when they made these decisions. And we have these applicants like last night that come in and say, we want to change this one thing. And that gives me pause. I want to know, why do you want to change that one thing and why should we change it? We really want to think very carefully before overturning a previous agreement, especially when they want to just change one part of it. You know, my thought is if and this isn't specific to Treasure or to Deercrest or any other, but if somebody wants to come in and open up an agreement, to me that should give City Council a chance to renegotiate that. If they want something from us, we should be able to ask for something from them as well.
Yeah. So isn't this a good thing, though, trying to eliminate that requirement to disconnect? Doesn't it then give you more options in the fact that if you really needed to open up that thoroughfare, you could?
I totally agree. I don't think anybody on our side of the table last night was in favor of blocking off that road. I think it's a good idea to leave it. You know, personally, I see it as a good idea to leave it intact. I just think that's an asset coming through there that again, if they want to renegotiate that agreement, then the city should get something out of it as well.
Okay, so it's really the process that you've got an issue with as opposed to the request itself?
You know, and Laura brought up a good point. She said, what if we, you know, on nights when Deer Valley's letting out and the traffic reaches a certain threshold, maybe we have an agreement with them, which I don't think they would be in favor of, but now's the time to negotiate it if they want something from us, that we could relieve some of our traffic by letting people get through there. And certainly for emergency access, we need to know that fire and police can get through there when they need to.
Yeah. Also, you'd heard from Planning Director Bruce Erickson, though, a little bit concerned just that the road is steeper than what's here, a 10% grade, I think. Would that still limit it to opening it up just to the general public?
Well, I think I'm not in the policymaking branch of the government, but when an applicant wants to open up a negotiation and change it, in my mind, that's the time that we should look at it and see maybe the city pays for some. And again, these are just my personal thoughts. Maybe the city pays for some improvements on that road and can use it as an overflow at certain times that we would negotiate with them. And they're not going to be in favor of that. So now's the time to negotiate it when they want something from us. They want to change the agreement. My argument would be let's sit down and discuss what we can do that's good for everybody if they're going to be allowed to make that change.
All right. You didn't make a decision on this. It comes back?
Correct.
All right.
And we won't make the decision then. We'll just make a recommendation. It'll be City Council's job to make it. But we're just hoping they'll negotiate for all of us when the time comes. Okay. Rather than just say, yes, you can have this thing, now's the time to talk about what we get in return.
All right. Anything else, Preston, you wanted to mention?
Same thing as always, just trying to get more public input on Treasure and all these other things when, you know, a lot of these issues impact all of us, and it would be nice to have more people come in and talk about it.
All right. Hey, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
KPCW News Time now, 8:40. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, a public conversation concerning community development and its long-term implications for taxation and quality of life in Summit County is scheduled for Monday, February 13th. In the studio with details, I have members of the Project for a Deeper Understanding, Ray Freer, along with David Hedderly-Smith. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So I mentioned Monday. Where is it going to be held and when?
It'll be at St. Luke's Church, you know, the Episcopal Church behind the Blue Roof 7-Eleven, out off of 224, and starting at 7 and ending sharply at 9. I think KPCW is going to be carrying it also.
Okay. So who have we got on the panel?
Well, we have really, really noteworthy people. Tom Clyde, Tom Fisher, who's the Summit County Manager, Diane Foster, Park City Manager, Jeff Jones is Economic Development Director of Summit County, and Chris Robinson is County Councilman, as well as Jack Thomas, Mayor of Park City. I couldn't think of a more noteworthy panel.
So why this topic?
Well, I think amongst our group, we're concerned about taxation levels and really where the community is headed these days. And my understanding is that Park City proper now is about two-thirds secondary landowners. I've been here since 85, and I would guess in the last 25 years that's flipped. That 25 years ago we were about one-third secondary landowners, two-thirds primary. The issue here is it possible that we're pricing ourselves out of the middle class, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah, and I bring this issue up a lot when we talk with city officials about their affordable housing plans. And, you know, with transit taxes, with open space bonds, with transit fees and stormwater fees and energy carbon reduction fees, we can build all the affordable housing you want, but all of a sudden it just got really expensive just to be here. So is that part of this discussion?
I think it probably will be. You know, we like to have this be a discussion and not be a gotcha kind of thing. We want to develop a community discussion on this or help it along. Yeah, we've also, I mean, you may recall last year we passed, a $25 million bond for the Snyderville Rec District. This next year we're going to be expanding our high school, and that's going to have a pretty steep price tag on it. Next year down the road, we're going to be building a new elementary school. And suddenly our taxes are going up to where, you know, the housing may be affordable, but the taxes aren't going to be affordable. Someone has to pay for all this. And, you know, our secondary homeowners help. They carry most of the burden, and that's sort of a dirty little secret. But
well, and that's always the excuse that's why we should do it, because primary property owners, you know, are getting such a deal that at some point, the deal becomes too burdensome in itself.
Well, the list of possible projects is enormous. It goes through the school districts and community centers, Snyderville Basin Rec, and Bonanza Flat, a bond issue to cover that, the various implications of additional development, meaning Treasure and the recently announced CRH 18.5-acre property, which is expected to be about 135,000 square feet on top of the million square feet of Treasure. At least that's what they're asking for. But having said that, 84% population increase is expected by 2040 for Summit County as a whole. And that means going from 40,000 to about 73,000 or 74,000 in population in Summit County. We have to provide for that additional growth.
All right. I mean, if you were to look at it from a partisan basis, you'd say, oh, we have a bunch of Democrats in power here. Where is the kind of the checks and balances here? I mean, people keep voting for this stuff.
They will keep voting for it as long as it's not punishingly expensive. But the question is, when does it become punishingly expensive?
Yeah, so that's where we're going to try and get to the bottom of on Monday?
I don't think we'll get to the bottom of it. I think we'll raise the issue and probably talk about it a bit. The format there is a moderator asking questions for the first hour. Actually, we're going to have a 10-minute presentation by the county's development economic development director. And then the moderator will take the rest of that hour. And then for the second hour, we'll have questions from the audience to the people. And again, we don't want to we want a friendly conversation on this stuff. This is what we're after.
All right.
We always seek that. But the panel is so strong in the sense of people who really know things that we should get some good answers out of them.
All right. And it's being moderated by whom?
Matt Linden will be moderating it this time.
All right. What other topics do you guys have planned for this year, or are you still working on it?
We're working on it, but we're also we're looking for the next one, kind of America, how did we get to where we are, and maybe a different format for that. We're looking at immigration. That's certainly a hot issue here in Park City. We think it'll probably get hotter in the next few months, and that's about where we are right now.
We explore these things and no conclusive decisions have been made, but they are coming, and they will be topics of considerable interest to the community.
Yeah, we don't want to get too organized too far ahead.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention about Monday's panel and forum?
Just that these are all pretty fine people. We're lucky to have them working for us, and we're looking forward to hearing what we have to what they have to say, and if indeed they agree that we're on a trajectory to sort of exterminate the primary landowner here in Park City over the next 20 or 30 years, the primary resident, because I really, you know, I fear that's where we're going, certainly in the city and to a lesser extent out in the Snyderville Basin. We just don't have affordable homes that America's middle class can buy.
All right. The format of it, basically the first hour just spent discussion amongst the panelists, and then from 8 to 9 you'll open it up to audience questions.
Correct.
Right you are.
Okay. David and Ray, thanks for coming in this morning. KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. In the studio now with our youth sports report, I have Heather Sims. She's director of youth programs for YSA. Heather Darling is a member of the middle school planning committee for the program that became Activate. And then Kevin Sedwich. He's the student at Ecker Hill. He's also one of the participants in the program, Activate. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, Heather Sims, let's start with you. You're building on success here from the Get Out and Play program.
Yeah, we're about halfway through the year now for this new Activate program. And actually, this week, we just hit our just went over 200 registrations. We've got 203 kids that have registered for the program, about half of which are a female. They're about 50-50 female, male. And we have each session, the kids get to choose between three options. So this Friday, for example, we've got a new session starting with bouldering, and we've got yoga with Aviva, and we've got a session at PC Mark. And so we have all the venues in town helping us put this program together, and the kids get a little passport at the end, and once they have done a CPR course and included and got seven activities including the CPR, they'll get a Park City Activate certificate at the end.
Okay, so this is the first year for this program?
It is. It's the first year, and I'm feeling pretty good about it because everybody is helping and excited, so it's fun. We've got people like Heather who has put together Teen Iron Chef, which sold out within an hour. So it's exciting, and I'm glad that the community has been very responsive.
Okay, and Heather, darling, the thinking was that we needed to call this something different than Get Out, learn to play, just because of the age and
yeah, it was a little bit more appealing. I think it makes them feel older. We wanted something different. So this, I wanted to focus on nutrition, and Teen Iron Chef was just a fun way to get people together, work on leadership skills, and learn how to cook, and then have a challenge at the end where they put all of the new skills that they've learned to use and see what they can come up with in a creative, healthy, fun way.
Okay. So was this the Team Iron Chef, that was just one of the choices then that they had to do?
That's the part that I'm involved in.
Oh, okay.
So there's quite a few different programs
So it's not just a one-time thing. It's a weekly ongoing.
Yep, for 4 weeks, there's four sessions.
Okay. And then, Kevin, how did you participate first and get out and play as a younger kid?
I actually did when I was really young. I did.
All right. So what did you learn how to do there?
I didn't learn as much as I did in this one.
Okay. And so which programs have you taken in Activate?
Mountain biking, adventure, fitness, and cross-country skiing.
Okay. So had you done cross-country skiing before?
Skate skiing I've done before, but not cross-country.
Okay. All right. So kids have an opportunity to do how many programs?
So they can do all eight in a year. It'll be tight, but they can do all eight in a year. Some of the programs are one day, like the CPR. Kevin actually did the CPR. He forgot to mention that. Every 4 weeks is three different options. So when Heather's doing her Teen Iron Chef, she's up against Kimball Arts Center. They're going to do a cartoon drawing, and Bass and Rec are doing adventure fitness. So there are some very active programs, and there are some that are more life learning skills. And so and that's really what we want is to get the kids engaged, to keep them active, and to provide life learning skills.
Okay. The cost?
They vary. So for example, Heather's is $65, and some of the others are $50. We're trying to make it very affordable. We've got grants that helped us. And so the idea is, though, really to get the kids involved and to make it affordable.
Okay, and scholarships are available?
Absolutely. As always, scholarships are available.
Okay, anybody else want to add something?
No, if you are interested in learning more about the program, you can go to ysaparkcity.org and check out the Activate button.
Okay, Kevin, you wanted to add something?
So every time you complete an activity, you have this passport, and you get one of the things on its side. There is accountability, which is CPR only, confidence, equality, inspiration, kindness, leadership, respect, and versatility.
Okay. All right, have fun. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, Jay and the Americans will be appearing at the Egyptian Theater Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. On the phone with details, I have Sandy Dean. He is one of the original band members. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
So who have you got?
How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. So who have you got touring with you? The original four?
Well, we have the three original Americans, and we have Jay number three, who's been, he's the new guy. He's only been with us 10 and a half years.
Oh, okay.
So we've been doing this a while.
Right.
And,
I mean,
don't worry, that's a voicemail, I guess.
Well, my understanding is that y'all started out as teenagers, like some 50 years ago. You guys have been able to make a living from music ever since, huh?
Yeah, thank goodness I've never had a day job. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
I've been really dedicated. Well, we were kids. We started out in a neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York, singing just for fun and snapping our fingers and doing harmonies and imitating the records on the radio. And we got very, very lucky. We say we've been blessed. We signed with two very famous record producers and songwriters named Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. And we were in their office for 4 years or so, learning how to make hit records and how to write songs. And, you know, they wrote for the Drifters and the Coasters. And we were like in rock and roll college. It was wonderful. And then we started producing our own records. And we've been doing this recording since 1960.
Wow.
So it's been a long, wonderful trip.
So, Jay,
and this end of it's even better, because at this point in our lives, we're just doing it because we love doing it, and nobody's telling us what to do. No record companies are bossing us around, or no managers. We're just having a great time.
So, Jay number three, does he have the vocal range that Jay number two did?
Oh, he wouldn't be in the group if he didn't. You know, I've been with all three Jays from the very beginning. The first guy was Jay Traynor. He's the one that sang She Cried, and we did our first album with him. And then we had David Blatt, who became Jay Black, and he sang Karamia and everybody's eyes flew open. And now we have Jay number three, Mr. Jay Ranke, and he's from Chicago. We found him there. And boy, does he sing those songs great. He's a wonderful vocalist. I mean, you know, you can't sing these songs in our catalog if you don't have that kind of voice.
Yeah.
So, and he does it a lot.
So is that what we should expect, kind of the greatest hits for the shows this week?
You will get a retrospective of the entire career of the group from the beginning right till the present day. All the hits, all people that we were associated with, that we made records with or for. And it'll be a fun night. The people leave the theater knowing a lot more about us than they did when they walked in.
Okay, tickets on Thursday start at $35. They go up to about $39 on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday shows. You can find out more by going to parkcityshows.com. Hey, good luck, and thanks for your time this morning.
Well, thanks for having us. We enjoy this. This is playing stickball with our friends.
Okay.
You know? This is what it's like.